Hey, what's going on? Welcome to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy, Julia Kreutz with you. Jays won last night, but before I got to watch that, I had to do my own equivalent of what Bowden Francis and Kevin Gausman and Ben Roethlisberger did before the Jays game yesterday, which is just like stand there in downtown Toronto, staring off into space, trying to refine myself, rediscover myself. Did we get an answer on what the hell was going on with Gausman and Bowden and Roethlisberger?
We did not. I assume it's just all in good fun, you know, let's see who lasts longer or something along those lines after the anthems. That's at least what it looked like from my perspective.
For anyone who doesn't know what we are talking about, after the anthems finished yesterday, Bowden Francis and Kevin Gausman remained on the field with their hats over their hearts, and Ben Roethlisberger for the Rays remained on the field as well. And it went on so long, this game of chicken of who would leave the field first, that the Blue Jays and Chris Bassett were out there.
Yeah.
Bassett was warming up.
It was first pitch time. It was 7:07, and those boys were still alive. But apparently it started in the first game of this series. It was just Francis and Roethlisberger, and they kind of just like did a little bit of a standoff and then went their separate ways. And so they just, I guess, upped the ante. Right. We'll see what happens today.
Gausman's starting. He could do it for as long as he wants. They can't start the game if he's still honoring the flag or whatever. Anyway, that was me downtown until about 8 o'clock this morning, just standing there in one space, no hand over the heart. Tough Leaf game.
What was the final score of that?
6-1.
Okay, I stopped really.
Yeah, as
counting.
You should have. So, my dad is here from Newfoundland, so I surprised him with tickets to Game 5 yesterday when he arrived here from Newfoundland. So that part of it was really fun and really great. But boy, did the Leafs suck!
Just burst the balloon a little bit. But I am sure that it's, you know, it's always nice when you get to do something nice for your father and be around family a little bit.
Part of it's great. The game sucked, though. Yeah. And, like, I've been to some bad games, and I've been to some bad playoff games. Never seen an arena empty out like that well before the end of a game. The booing I kind of expected. Like, turned in a full, like, nothing burger. Like, they just did not show up. And so that was a little expected. But the complete exit was surprising, because I've been at some bad Jays playoff games. Yep. I've been at some bad Raptors playoff games. And I don't know, maybe basketball and baseball just give you like a tiny little bit of extra hope that you can come back late. Maybe those teams just had better, you know, it certainly wasn't year 9 of an era of the same group failing. But yeah, anyway, all of that is to say, when I got home and watched the Blue Jays game afterward, what a nice surprise. 3-1 victory. Pretty easy one. Not easy in terms of execution, but emotionally a pretty straightforward 3-1 Jays victory.
Yeah, super quick game. Really, you know, it was a comeback victory, which is also fun and different and not something that we were treated to a whole lot last season from this team. And I have to say, Blake, that when I checked the Leafs score, and I think it was 6-0 at that time, I thought to myself, okay, at least Blake has, you know, a good Blue Jays game, a happy Blue Jays game to come home to and watch before the show today. Because if there had been both losses there, I would have felt really, really bad for
it. And most importantly, like you said, it was a quick one. So when I get home at 10:30, I was able to kind of zoom through it. The West Coast basketball game was not super competitive. So yeah, just fired that up. And okay, so if you missed it, Jays won 3-1. They've won 5 of 6 now. Very good game from Chris Bassett and the bullpen. But the big story in this one, Alejandro Kirk returns to the lineup after taking the old bat to the noggin from Julio Rodriguez a couple days prior. Tyler Heineman got the start on Tuesday after an off day Monday. Alejandro Kirk starts in this one and comes through in a number of ways. He has a single. He has the big 3-run home run. He throws a runner out. That's like a charge with a throwing error that I don't think should have been an error on him. There was a runner stealing base and nobody was there to catch the throw down to second. Not sure that one's fair to hang on Kirk.
He did what he could.
Yeah, we'll talk running game in a second, though. But Alejandro Kirk comes through with that big 3-run home run in the sixth. Takes one to right center field off Ryan Pepiot.
That was an impressive at-bat in more ways than one. You don't necessarily expect Kirky to hit a ball that hard and not to the pole side, right? It was kind of like straightaway center, a little bit to right field, I guess, if you want to get really technical with it. 0-2, 97-mile-an-hour fastball. He knew it was coming. It was really, really, really impressive to see just, you know, the game plan. And later on, after the game, he's talking about just wanting to be on time for the fastball. You and I, Blake, have spoken a little bit about what has been different for this offense over the past little bit. And one thing that is considerably different and better is that when they show up, when they go to the plate, it is clear that they have a game plan and they are following through on that game plan. That is what we saw from Alejandro Kirk. You know, maybe a little bit of an awkward at bat earlier on in the game. I think his first at bat was not very good, but he stuck with it. And he is hitting the ball hard. He does seem to be in a good space physically and mentally, and it's showing repeatedly. It's funny, I had to write a feature about Kirk when, you know, earlier in the season when things were not going super well offensively. And I was like, okay, if we want to highlight the positives, maybe I'll focus on the defense a little bit more. But I went back and I watched his press conference again after he signed his extension. And one thing that stood out was, you know, him saying, listen, I feel like I'm in a better spot mentally and physically than I was in 22, which was the Silver Slugger season. And you kind of listen to it and you say, okay, sure, you did well in spring training, but...
And he was a part-time DH that year, right? So yes. It's when we talk about, you know, especially most catchers... But when we're talking about, especially Kirk, what he's going to look like in a post-Danny Jansen era where Tyler Heineman has been good. He's been better than you could have expected from, you know, a guy Absolutely. Who spent most of his career as a third catcher, not a backup catcher. But what are the concerns? And it's how are you going to hold up to that workload? How is the bat going to stay? You know, if you have to catch 120 games instead of 85 or 90 games, what is that bat going to look like? He has now got the batting line up slightly above league average, 716 OPS. Let's get into some of the at-bats. You mentioned the bad at-bat in the first, his first time up. Really bad 0-1 fastball. Like, what are you reaching for? And Ryan Pepiot has this high-rise fastball. I mentioned it yesterday. He's one of the top guys in the league at getting that kind of induced vertical break, so it just sits up there. He threw a lot of fastballs yesterday, almost all of them in the upper half of the zone. And interestingly, 71% of the fastballs he threw were in the strike zone. So if you're a Blue Jay and you know that this is his primary weapon, and to your point, you're going up there looking for a fastball, Kirk saw Pepiot three times, and he got two sliders mixed in there. One was kind of a, like, let's steal a strike early, I think. But for the most part, he was getting those fastballs. The single that he had in his second at-bat, he took a high fastball the other way. That first at-bat, it was way out of the zone up. The second one was kind of, you know, spotted at the top where Pepiot was looking for a guy to swing under it. Kirk stays back and takes it the other way. And then, Kirk gets all the credit for putting a good piece of hitting on it. But Pepiot probably only missed this spot two or three times the whole game, especially with the fastball. 0-2, like, we're talking middle on that one. And Kirk was, again, to your initial point, so ready for that. He probably had a good sense from the first two plate appearances and how Pepiot was attacking the Jays in general that a fastball up was coming there. And then when that fastball that's supposed to be a rise fastball doesn't have that rise on it, it just kind of sits middle. Kirk gave it the rise it needed.
100%. Listen, Kirk likes the ball up in the zone, and you know that didn't rise as much probably as he even was expecting it, but... Yeah, he is a smart hitter, and he is a very, very smart catcher. And so if you give him a chance to see a guy three times, and, you know, speaking post-game, he said he throws that fastball at any count, at any point in the game. And so that is what I was looking for. That is what I was concerned with, just being on time for that. That, I think, Blake, is when you kind of see a little bit of what he was talking about at the start of the season, being in a better place mentally to just understand what the opposing game plan may be and what he can do with it. And listen, if you're going to challenge Alejandro Kirk right now with the way that he's hitting the ball, good luck. You better execute. And if you don't, he'll make you pay for it.
And if you don't execute in the batters before him, that's going to be a 3-run home run instead of a solo shot, because the other mistakes Pepiot made probably came in the Vlad plate appearance in the sixth inning that started that inning. Vlad took a walk to kind of get that thing going. It looked like he'd been setting him up to get the punch out slider low and away, and then instead went fastball low and away when it was 3-2 and just missed by a mile. You might get Vlad to chase outside the zone with two strikes on a breaking ball that goes strike the ball, but when you spot the fastball that far outside, no dice. Pepiot was pretty good overall, but that sixth inning, those couple of mistakes there, the Jays were able to take advantage, and that was it for the offense for the most part for the Blue Jays. I mentioned Kirk's now up to an above average line on the season, hitting .293, .318 OBP, .398 slugging. And yes, those numbers don't sound crazy, but that is a slightly above average batting line in the year 2025.
Yeah, and listen, it's the beginning of the season was pretty dreadful. So to be at league average right now is a pretty big win. And, you know, I don't expect him to stay this hot for the rest of the season. That would be, you know, challenging Cal Raleigh for a silver slugger again. But this is definitely a win, and the Blue Jays needed it. You mentioned Vlad's at bat, and we don't have to go super deep into it, but I thought that he missed a couple of pitches to hit there. He kind of needed to settle for a walk. There were a couple of breaking balls that just landed in the middle. He couldn't do anything with it. And I don't know, you know, you kind of want more from Vladdy than just settling for a walk there. It kind of worked out in his favor for sure, but, or in the team's favor at least. But I don't know. We've spoken a lot about this offensive renaissance. We're not talking about Vladdy all that much. Starting to wonder if that's a bit of a problem here.
Yeah, I mean, that at bat, yeah, you're right. A 2-2 slider that got a lot of middle. And that's what I meant when I said I thought Pepio was setting him up for breaking ball low and away because he gave him two in the zone. And then so immediately I'm thinking, okay, he's spotted the fastball like as balls, as show, like, you know, miss a good amount out of the zone, see if you can get him to chase a bad one. But it looked to me like he was setting him up for another breaking ball low and away, and he misses the setup, the 3-2, and then almost hits flat on the walk pitch. So, yeah, Vlad in general is in a bit of a weird spot right now where he's been on base pretty much every game. I think there's one game in the last little bit where he hasn't been on base. He only has two extra base hits in his last 11, and those are both doubles, not home runs. So he's hitting .357 over that stretch, but he's only got a .405 slugging. So we talked about with Bo Bichette earlier in the year that, you know, the .357, you'll take .357 anytime. You'll take it with no extra base hits, but it's a little bit of an empty .357. Vlad does have a .462 on base during that stretch as well. You look, though, and he's only at about 30% better than league average at the dish so far. That's fine if we accept that Vlad's first 50 games or so of each season have tended to be a little lower damage than the rest of the season. But yeah, right now it's a lot of walks and singles. At least it's not a lot of, you know, chase and whiff and you know, expand and stuff like that. Yeah. But yeah, right now a lot of jabs, to go back to that earlier analogy John Schneider was using.
He is still obviously, you know, making hard contact because Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a very strong hitter. And I forget if it was yesterday or the day before, because these games do start to blur together a little bit, but maybe he would have had a double. He hit a ball extremely hard that just landed in a glove. I think it was a shortstop, and that looked destined for extra bases if the defense wasn't very, very well positioned. But still, right? It's the fact that it's finding a glove. It's the fact that he's not putting the ball in the air as consistently. We talk a lot about launch angle with Vladdy, and kind of here we are again.
Although there is, so we can account for some of this stuff. So obviously I know people kind of roll their eyes sometimes, the hard hit. Well, if you hard hit it right on the ground to the shortstop, et cetera. There is a stat from Robert Orr at Baseball Perspectives called damage rate. And it takes each batted ball and looks at how hard it was hit, where it was hit left to right, where it was hit up and down, and gives it the question is, should we expect this ball to do damage?
Right.
Not just should we expect it to fall in for a single. Vlad's damage rate so far this year is about 26%, which isn't, you know, elite level Vlad. It's not where he was in 2021, but it's right around where he finished last year for the whole season and 2022. So, you know, that's not everything, but that does at least help us account for the launch angle. And the Caballero one was right at
there
yesterday.
You go. That's the one.
It was hit extremely hard. I think it was like 110 or 112 or something like that, but right at. So we can account for that a little bit. And yeah, about a quarter of the balls he's putting in play are damaged balls, which is not top of the league elite, but it's around where Vlad finished last year in 2022. So
yeah. So what you're saying is that if this is the low, if this is the empty calories, Vlad's going to be okay.
I love it.
He'll figure
calories.
It out.
Yeah. Vlad will. I have to go back and I have to pull some of the time series data and see just like you know, we have monthly splits on Baseball Reference and stuff like that, but those are only results. I want to try to pull the damage rate month over month each season and see if, because in my head, it feels like I've talked about this a lot in April and May on the shows. And then by midsummer, the damage rate goes up. The results obviously come. That happened pretty dramatically last year.
Absolutely.
Around this time. So we'll see. In the interim, I'll take hitting 357 in your lull stretch over an 11-game stretch. Not a lot else to talk about on offense in this one because, again, it was a 3-1 game, and the Jays lost their little streak of 10 straight hits. On the defensive and pitching side, though, hey, you held them to one run. And I want to go back to Alejandro Kirk because he threw out maybe the fastest player in baseball in Chandler Simpson. Opponents this year are 23 for 38. Stealing bases against the Blue Jays, which is bad. That is the best caught stealing percentage in the league. It's some of the lowest attempt volume in the league. So we're seeing teams push it on Kirk and Heinemann a little bit less. And that's coming a long way because last year, the Blue Jays starters, particularly Kevin Gausman, who starts today, struggled to control the running game. We know pretty well at this point, it was an old baseball thing, and now it's a new thing that we can quantify it. You steal a base on the pitcher, you get thrown out by the catcher, is kind of the way to frame it. Kirk's arm strength has improved this year, but it's still like average at best. What Kirk has really, really nailed down is that throw behind the runner so that the second baseman or shortstop or whoever's coming catches it right into the tag behind the runner. It's pretty fascinating. You look at each component, it's like, the arm's not that great. Oh, the pop time's improved, but it's not elite. How is he doing this? And then you watch the clips and like, oh yeah, every single one is kind of that tailing to the backside of second base right into the tag on the foot or the hip.
And it's pinpoint. It's been really, really impressive. It's playing to your strengths. I really, really believe that is the difference maker for a guy like Kirk. We know that he doesn't have the natural physical attributes to, you know, thrive at these quote unquote conventional caught stealing stats, but he's playing to his strengths. He knows what he's good at and he knows how to leverage that in order to get those outs. And that was a huge out. I know that he had an error later on. We spoke a little bit about that already, but that saved a run because there was a hard hit single right after that from Brandon Lau, I want to say. So, you know, you kind of look at where the game was. It's a very, very close game. You needed everything that Kirk gave you last night. And that's just what he's doing. He's really, really focused right now.
It's great. And he is, you know, when we control for things like the pitcher's time to the plate and stuff like that, which Kirk obviously can't control, he is +3 caught stealing above expected. And Tyler Heinemann's also +2. So when we look at that, the Jays have thrown out 15 of 38 base stealers and teams are running a little less against them. That tandem has done a pretty good job. I am very curious to see how that goes today, though, because Kevin Gausman has actually been neutral so far this year in controlling the run game. Now it's only 8 starts. Last year he was -8 bases, which was one of the worst marks in the league. I believe Corbin Burns was the only full-time starter who was a little worse than him. So that will be interesting to see. He has historically been like opposing teams stole 59 bases off of him across 2022, 2023, and 2024. So, you know, not quite want to start, but pretty often, and this is a Tampa Bay Rays team that is 4th in stolen bases and 2nd in stolen base attempts. So we now know Kirk is behind the plate again today. We have a lineup for today that we can go into a little bit later. But big challenge for Alejandro Kirk and Kevin Gausman because that's a Rays team that is, I don't think they're going to care that they got caught yesterday or that the Jays have a very good caught stealing rate. This is a Tampa Bay Rays team that wants to run on everyone.
Especially against a guy like Gausman, who I know has been perhaps a touch inconsistent so far this year, but he's a very, very good pitcher. And he is going, again, to play to his strengths here. There is a lot of swing and miss to be had. And we've seen Kevin Cash be very aggressive with hit and runs and things of the sort. So, if they get runners on base, I expect this Tampa Bay Rays team to run. So Kirk should have a few more challenges this afternoon.
He sure should. And your point on the error, the Chris Morel stolen base where he got the third base. There was nobody there to catch the throw from Kirk. A guy's stealing and no one's there. I guess the error has to go to someone, but it felt a little unfair that it was Kirk. It was not a particularly good throw. It was there was a swing on the play as well. So it looked more like a botched hit and run than a straight steal. But either way, Not going to ding him too much for that one.
Yeah.
The other way the Jays prevented runs in this one, a solid Chris Bassitt game, 5 2/3 innings, one earned. He didn't get a lot of swing and miss, but pretty typical Bassitt game.
Yeah.
Mixing a lot of things up, keeping guys guessing, sneak the curveball in there for a strike here and there. But then it was really the bullpen that Sean Brendan Little gets four outs. Yariel Rodriguez has a clean eighth inning, and then Jimmy Garcia has a seven pitch ninth. As far as the last 2 weeks go, given that the bullpen hasn't had the best time, easy peasy in this one.
Yeah, you didn't necessarily know what to expect based on how things were going, but you kind of, okay, we're watching Chris Bassitt's highlights from yesterday right now, and it's funny to me that Chris Bassitt starts are always so, they always look so laborious. They always look like he is, when he comes out of the game, it's like he's coming back from war, legitimately. He pitched with runners on base pretty much the whole night. He was, you know, saying profanities to himself when he missed his spot. It was, you know, that part of the game was rather slow because he's checking on the runner and there's so much going on. Pitch comm issues early on in the game that sort of delayed things a little bit. And when he comes out of the game, I go to check the box score and I'm like, oh, he actually did very well. This is great. The Blue Jays are in a very good spot. But while it's happening, it looks just so much heavier than what the numbers would indicate. And that was 100%. That is 100% a classic Chris Bassitt start. And then by the time Brendan Little comes in, he's cruising. And that knuckle carve still looks very good. And if hitters are not necessarily chasing that, it's okay because the sinker also looks amazing.
And they really are chasing the knuckle curve still. He got four whiffs on it yesterday. It is the minimum 100 pitches thrown. It's the number one swing and miss pitch in baseball right now. If we lower the qualifications just a little bit, Mason Miller's slider takes over in the Athletics bullpen. But either way, if you are at the top of the category or Mason Miller is the only guy in your way, you're doing something pretty well with that pitch. Again, Yariel, a really good eighth, using that slider more the last little bit as he moves to the bullpen. That's something I'm probably going to talk about on Blue Jay Central tomorrow. And then Jimmy Garcia, a nice seven pitch inning. I'm going to do this ad read now so that we can hit break on time and maybe talk lineups before we talk to Abby Labar of Quick Pitch on MLB Network. Before we do all that, we've got a backyard boost for listeners across the GTA, and it all starts with playing it safe before you dig. We're giving away a $100 Home Hardware gift card thanks to our friends at Ontario One Call to help you kick off your outdoor projects the right way. Before you plant a tree, build a fence, or put in that new pool, you've got to do one thing first. Click before you dig. Submit a locate request through Ontario One Call before digging for any size project. Text the code word click to dig to 590-590 for your chance to win a $100 Home Hardware gift card and make that backyard project a reality the safe way. Again, text click to dig to 590-590 for your shot to win. Standard message and data rates may apply. If you win in the region, the 519, and you go to Westgate Plaza Home Hardware where I used to work, there's a Dairy Queen and a really good Chinese food spot in that same plaza that I abused while I worked there. You probably don't want to drive all the way to Cambridge if you're winning in Toronto, but if one of our region listeners happens when you get a little blizzard, get a little General Tao on your way, it's a good...
Yeah.
Terrific plaza. Okay. Cambridge, Ontario, mini malls.
Yeah.
Perfect. Let's go.
I've never been, but
missing out.
Now I know what to look for. This is awesome.
Southwark Antiques is like a big like vintage and thrift shop. It's a really good spot. And it's like right by the water where they shoot a bunch of the Handmaid's Tale stuff because we have all the old stone architecture and the big stone river walls along the Grand. Not a ton to do at night. But downtown Galt, Cambridge, not that bad.
All right. Well, I hope Maxine isn't listening. She loves antiques. She may just book us a trip to
Cambridge. A good spot. You can find some tremendously weird stuff there. Some stuff that doesn't belong in 2025. Some other stuff that is weirdly priced for antique stuff. But you can find some good retro sports gear, too. I have.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, you get the odd framed or signed photo, some old albums.
Okay.
You know, I was going to say action figures. I don't know what the term is for like the little hockey player guys or whatever.
The little dolls?
Nah, not dolls. Like a little, it's not action figure because they don't move. But you know what I'm talking about? Like a little hockey guy this big?
I don't. If you know what Blake is talking about, also
I just don't know the word for it. Everyone who like knows sports toys as a kid. It's like an action figure, but it's a hockey guy, but none of the parts move. And I'm sure there's baseball guys too. Anyway, this is very clear that I need to take a break. Let's do that. When we come back on the other side, we'll go around the world of baseball with Abby Labar of Quick Pitch from MLB Network. That's next as Jays Talk Plus continues. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. The Jays and Rays will settle this series at Rogers Center at 3:07 today. Work from Dome Day. Kevin Gausman against Zach Littell. We have a lineup. It's the usuals with the exception of Dalton Varsho getting a down day. Miles Straw taking the duties in center field. We'll set you up for that one in a little bit here, help you get to know Zach Littell and his 4.40 ERA. But first, we're going to go around the world of baseball, and we're going to do it with one of my favorites of Quick Pitch on MLB Network, Abby Labar. Abby, good morning. How you doing?
What's up, guys? How are we?
Oh, doing all right. Happy to have you. Thanks so much for joining. How are things on your end?
I mean, hey, it's baseball season. We're in full force. We're having fun here. I know you guys are having, I would say you're having fun with the Blue Jays, but it sounds like hockey is more like a thing up there right now that you guys are getting pumped about.
Yeah, when you say fun.
I was going to say, my girl Anna Dua, you've held her hostage with these Maple Leafs. The more they keep winning, the more you keep her up there. So,
well,
thank you.
I was at the game last night, and I can confidently say I think there's only one more. You'll get Anna back momentarily here if the Leafs play like that again on Friday.
The pessimist.
Tough one. You lose 6-1. I'm going to be a little negative about it. Abby, you've done some hockey stuff. You've done some college football stuff, but this is year two for you on Quick Pitch on MLB Network. How are you enjoying that move to baseball and doing the Quick Pitch show?
I mean, Quick Pitch is awesome. You guys get to watch it. We have so much creative freedom on that show, which is super unique in this industry, right? Like my producers, my research team, my directors, they're so open to coming up with new ideas and little bits, and everyone just kind of buys into it. I think in a 162 game season, it's long, right? And we're a highlight show, and we're showing so many highlights every single night that you kind of hit Groundhog Day at a certain point. So how do you keep it exciting? And so to be able to have a show where we're able to bring that to the fans and just add a little twist of fun to every single moment and highlight into the players and play on their names and play on these teams, it really truly is such a special role, one that I've never been able to have throughout my career. And we've really just ran with it in year two more so than we even got to do in year one. Was kind of like, let's test the waters. I think my producers would come to me with ideas and they'd be like, are you sure you want to put on this insane hat tonight to talk about the Tigers? And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And now they know, like, I buy into it. So we have a good time. But I think for MLB, the craziest thing, and I tell people this a lot, like, in hockey, you have your star players, right? And like, there's a couple star players on each team. In baseball, there's so many players to keep up with because everybody is so good in a different way, right? Like the pitchers are unique and, the position players are unique. And then you have all these prospects that are, you know, playing with these teams that you're following throughout the country in the minor leagues. And so it's been a learning curve for sure, but absolutely been a blast. And for me, like some of the guys that I covered when I was in college with NC State, like Carlos Rodon, Trey Turner, even Patrick Bailey, to see those players just succeeding right now too is also really unique and cool.
And there seems to be a little bit more of an appetite these days, right, Abby, for fun stuff around baseball. This has traditionally been a little bit of a, baseball is serious business.
Yeah, we finally dragged them there. We're getting guys like me out and we're having more fun.
Trust me, there's still guys like you on Twitter. They're like, just stick to baseball. I'm like, guys, come
no,
on.
It's not that big. It's a lot of fun. I'm more the Mike Petriello type of a little dry, but let's have some fun still. So the appetite's there. What is the creative process like when you do something like the Wheel of Fortune sketch the other week? What is that process like? Is that you kind of coming with that idea, they throwing it at you and seeing what you're comfortable with? How do you guys figure that stuff out?
Team effort. It depends on the night, right? Like, I kind of joke sometimes, like me and my producer have this joke, like there's a funny TikTok about it. And it's like this girl talking about like, you know, who has the brain cell today? Is it me or my friend? With my producer, I'm like, who has the brain cell today? Because it really, like, some days I come in and I'm exhausted and I'm like, my creative juices aren't flowing, and you know, my producers are. So like, he'll kind of come up with topics and be like, okay, where can we go with this? And then a director or a graphics team will come in and they'll be like, well, what if we did? And that's how Wheel of Fortune came to light, right? Like, we had already, like, he dove into the numbers for the Wheel of Fortune stuff on DeGrom. And he was like, okay, I think there's something here we could do with the strikeouts. And then, you know, somebody else came in and said, what about a game show? And then our director came in and was like, well, let's make two Abbeys. And so it truly is a team effort. I write, you know, I write my scripts in my voice. So whether it's the idea, the idea is mine or not that night, I'm usually always writing those on cameras to kind of fit my voice. But honestly, like, my researchers do a great job when they're throwing in stats. And some of those, like, we call them page twos, like after the highlights roll, where we're going over like the stats and the numbers, those are kind of being pumped into the show, like as I'm doing the show. And my researchers have caught on to like how I talk and my voice. So instead of me having to change those scripts as the show goes on, like, they do a fantastic job of like knowing how I would speak or what I would say. And I love corny like lines and stuff. So yeah, it's a team effort for sure. And everyone's so talented.
That's really, really cool to sort of hear, you know, creativity is not linear. And that's why obviously you need sort of a team. You need everyone involved. And then sometimes
stealing the one brain cell gimmick for sure. Like, the two of us and our producer Amit, we're stealing that for sure.
Yeah, we usually share just one between
the
three of us.
I'll send you guys the video. Okay. I'll send it to you on Instagram. It's funny.
But then sometimes it's like, you don't even need to be that creative because the segment writes itself when you have Javi Baez sort of, you know, attempting the Manny and things like that when he hits when he hits that walk-off homer. He looks like he's back. Javi Baez is back, which is something I did not expect to say, Abby, in 2025.
It's so crazy because I was thinking about this the other day. Like, I actually did follow him during the Cubs days because I, you know, my career's kind of been, I'm in football sometimes. And, you know, so I haven't really followed baseball as much as I used to when I was in college covering it over the last several years. And like, I remember Baez with the Cubs because my boyfriend at the time in college, like, I literally got him a Baez Cubs jersey, like, when I was in school. Like, he loved Javi Baez. And so it's kind of just funny for me because I'm like, oh, I remember this guy when he was the Cubs. And he did. He kind of fell off for a while. You know, I think what the Tigers are doing is really something special. And I think they have had these kind of surprise players start producing, like, whether it's the young guys. I don't think anyone really expected Baez to be playing the way that he did, especially moving to center field, right? Like, I think that's the bigger testament too, that a lot of people like aren't necessarily seeing. Like, you look at his offensive numbers and you're like, okay, these are unbelievable right now for him. And then you're like, wait a second, like, he's been an infielder most of his career and now he's out at center field. So not only has he made the adjustment defensively, but being able to produce offensively says a lot about, I think, his mental game too, right? And just how he's been able to mentally approach both the plate and the field position. So what they're doing in Detroit is fun to watch. I think a lot of us like picked up on it, obviously, the end of last season, and to see it carry over and then to have these like more of these surprises like Baez come in is just kind of the icing on the cake for AJ Hinch and squad, which apparently it's AJ Hinch's birthday today.
Oh, so nice.
Wow.
Good for Detroit for sitting where they are in the standings right now and AJ Hinch.
And he's got an off day before he comes to Toronto. Maybe he's around town today. I don't know if they would have come in early.
Yeah.
And I thought Javi was going to do it again last night. He came up in another big spot. He ended up popping out. But then Justin Henry Molloy, to your point about another young guy, kind of comes out of nowhere and chips in. Didn't expect Justin Henry Molloy to walk off Aroldis Chapman, but love to see it. Okay, so the Tigers are here this weekend. We'll get to know them a little bit more. One of the reasons I love firing up Quick Pitch in the morning, Abby, is we can't always stay up for all the West Coast games, but you guys got us covered for that. And it just so happens this year that, like, there is a heavy concentration of the really good, really fun teams in the NL West. How much fun has that division been for you to follow so far?
I love it. My brother is actually a massive Giants fan. He has season tickets out there. And so, like, I'm from North Carolina. So, like, everyone's like, who's your team? And so, like, a lot of North Carolinians were like drawn to the Braves. That was kind of our natural, like, team. And I wasn't like a massive Braves fan growing up. But my sister now lives in Atlanta. So she goes to a lot of Braves games. And then my brother has been in San Francisco for a while. So he is constantly texting me, like, and he's awake, like, when I'm in studio. So he's always texting me about Giants games. So it's kind of been fun to watch San Francisco kind of go on this little run here. But no, I mean, like, everybody coming this season was like, the Dodgers are going to be dominant. And it's like, okay, yeah. I mean, and they still are, even with all the injuries, they have so much depth. But you forget about the Padres, like, how good the Padres were last season. Like, the Diamondbacks, one of the best offenses, you know, they've had one of the best offenses. I think if they can figure out the pitching situation, they're going to be in a better spot. But, you know, these all four of these teams in the NL West are all within 5 games of first place. So, you know, it definitely is. And I think there's another stat that my research team sent me. The top 5 average leaders in the NL are with either the Dodgers or the Padres. So it's definitely been like a really fun division to watch. But I do think it goes to show that there are other teams that are going to be able to compete with the Dodgers, especially the Padres. And Fernando Tatis Jr. continues to be such an incredible story. So I've enjoyed seeing what the Friars have done. But yeah, we love watching these West Coast games because, you know, we have to when we're still in studio at 12:31 a.m. But it gives us something fun to be a part of for sure.
And not just like the good teams. There's so many good stories in those teams, like the pitching equivalent of Javi Baez. Shelby Miller on his 9th major league team is a closer now. And locked it down 2 nights in a row in division rival games against the Giants there. So a lot to like there. The Giants themselves, it seems like that. I know they just dropped a couple, but Christian Koss, you know, first career home runs, a grand slam. That it's one of my favorite parks in baseball of the 24 that I've been to. It seems like, you know, it seems like kind of like a party there. Like, I know all those parks are good parks, but the Giants seem like, if we're going on vibe or juice at home, they seem maybe a little ahead of the pack.
When you talk about like fan bases, right, like a fan base like fueling your team, it's definitely the Giants, I would say, out of anybody in that division. Maybe the Padres too. I've been to Petco. I feel like that's fun. But the Giants are just like, people in the Bay Area are just like so laid back. And, you know, I think there's an expectation. There has been an expectation with this team for the last couple of seasons. But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think, you know, they're not like, you know, screaming about, they're not like Dodgers fans where it's like, you have to win or you're, you know, screw it, whatever. They still support their team regardless. The Hooligans is a great example. Have you guys seen the Hooligans?
Yes.
I have not.
The Jung Hoo Lee supporters, the Hooligans.
I love
that. And there's another example of a player that like nobody really, you know, good for Jung Hoo Lee and the way that he's been producing. Yeah. And then all of a sudden he's got this massive fan base behind him. And they just did, I think it was Korean Heritage Night at the ballpark. So they had all this Korean food and there was like 100 of the Hooligans that showed up. And, you know, and so I think having a beautiful park like that in a city where the weather's pretty good for baseball. I know it's not sunny and warm all the time, but it's at least comfortable. Yeah, for sure. And my brother sends me pictures and videos from the ballpark often.
I got to go. I'm gonna have a little bit of Toronto sports positivity for like one moment on the show today. That's it after that Leaf game. But I got to go to that park when I was in San Francisco covering the Raptors during the championship.
Oh, that's
there was like an off night, and I'm like, okay, me and Eno Saras from The Athletic. Yes. Went to a game, and it also has one of the best beer selections of the ballparks I've been to.
Really?
Yeah, really good. I guess it's just a part of the culture there, but yeah, very, very good beer selection. Man. It was right up my alley.
That's so cool. I mean, listen, like the Giants were kind of due, right, to be good. We've been waiting for this for a little bit now, and Jung Hoo Lee, I think, is just, you know, he's one guy, but in my mind, at least, he has been a little bit of that energizer, right? The fun new guy who's producer.
For sure.
Yeah.
And then you have the veterans, right? Like Matt Chapman and Yastrzemski, like all those guys are producing too, which is, I think it's just like one of those firing on all cylinders things. And again, they have to in such a really tough division right now. So I'm interested to see how this is all going to play out. I think if anyone's going to really contest with the Dodgers, it's going to be the Padres. I don't know necessarily. It just sucks to look at all four of these teams and be like, you know, look at the postseason. It's like one of these teams isn't going to make it. Like it's insane to think, you know, because they're so, so good. So it is kind of an unfortunate situation for both the Giants and the D-backs to be in. But again, like we've seen all the injuries so far with the Dodgers and, you know, they're going to get, guys healthy. But you know how it works in baseball? Like, there's the ebbs and flows, and it's really who's going to be healthy and who has that momentum going into the postseason. 100%. Very much could be the Giants. Like, it really could. So they have the pieces.
Yeah.
Abby, we mentioned San Fran and San Diego there. Do you have, and I know you have to be in the studio most nights, so you maybe don't get to go to Citi Field and Yankee Stadium a ton. But do you have a favorite ballpark of the ones you've been to?
So I have been to Citi Field and Yankee Stadium a few times, which are fun. My first baseball game was actually Angel Stadium, and oh. I was out in Anaheim for a field trip or something in high school. Petco Park was really cool. Petco Park and Colorado.
Okay.
Coors Field was like, it was one of those though. Coors Field was like, everybody was like, this is one of the coolest like ballparks, and so I kind of had the high expectations, so it wasn't something where I was like wowed by. I haven't been to Oracle. I would like to go. And like, there's this argument up here in New York, like, which is better, Citi Field or Yankee Stadium? The consensus for most people is that Citi Field is better. I really do enjoy going to Citi Field. You know, the food there is great. The people there are awesome. It's really pretty out on the water. But there's nothing like Yankee Stadium, right? Like, it's just historic and iconic. And, you know, to be able to just literally go there on the weekends, I think I take it for granted sometimes. But there's always like so many cool people that are in attendance there, and former players and celebrities, and you know, just that environment itself is just very historic and special and unique. So I definitely need to add more to my list though, because I did check out the latest and greatest George M. Steinbrenner Field. That was an experience. It was unique, but it reminded me of in college basketball, Cameron Indoor Stadium, like the small, intimate venue. It feels fun. It feels like a baseball game more than I think the Trop did. But yeah, that was a fun experience that I got to do this year.
Glad you got to cross that one off the list before they move away and it turns into a minor league park again. And listen, Citi Field, Yankee Stadium, these days you know that you're getting a good game, right? Those two teams are very, very good right now. Wanted to sneak one Mets question in there. Juan Soto heating up. He seems to have turned a corner here, and you even joked a little bit on Twitter. We're Mets fans are really that worried at any point. Is this the year? Is this the year, Abby? It seems like the pitching is really good. The offense is getting there. What are your thoughts on the Mets right now?
Yeah, kind of slow rolling a little bit, right? Like, no, I mean, I don't think there's anything to be worried about for Mets fans. I definitely think, you know, they have what it takes. I think with Soto heating up, I think this is going to be a really telling series between the Yankees. I think there's going to be a lot of animosity and a lot of chance. Trent Grisham has been playing well too for the Yanks. So I think they're kind of like, and obviously Aaron Judge. I think if anything surprised me, it's the Yankees production without Juan Soto. I think a lot of people were worried about that. You know, I think the Mets have been exciting. I think there is an opportunity here for sure. But yeah, I mean, like in his last 12 games, I think Soto's got what, like 5 homers, 411 on base percentage, like he's slugging over 600. So, you know, I think consistency, I think the Mets are going to probably be one of those more consistent teams where we're not going to see like the ebbs and flows as much as some of these other clubs. And so I think that's going to do a good job at like carrying into the right like playoff positioning for them as well. But yeah, I'm excited to see the series that's coming up between the Mets and the Yankees, because that's going to be a spicy one for sure.
Definitely. Abby, before we let you go, outside of the baseball stuff, you've also started doing on Instagram touching base, this kind of weekly, you know, pulling back the curtain a little bit, talking about yourself a little bit more. And sharing even, I know you had posted that you're going through to become a trainer and stuff like that. I guess. I mostly just wanted to ask how you're finding kind of opening up the personal side in addition to the sports side on social media, and B, if you've figured out how to say no to things yet, because we are both talking about our inability to do that as well.
You know, I think one of the coolest things, so when I worked for the Carolina Hurricanes, like I was hosting my shows and I was at the games, right? Like I'm at the games, I'm talking to the fans, you know, I'm literally like, I'm I'm creating this bond with the audience and I can see my audience, and it was really unique and it was really special. And then when I moved into this role, you know, I'm reaching such a bigger audience, but I'm not seeing that audience when I'm in the studio. You know, I'm in a studio every single night. I'm not getting to interact with the fans. And so, you know, I just felt like I wanted to feel more of like that connection with, you know, the people that like watch the show and the sports fans. And, you know, I started to get more of a following. And so I think too, just for me, like, having a balance in my personal life and finding passions like outside of this career. You guys get it. It's tough.
Oh, yeah.
And for a long time, like it was my therapist who asked me one time, she's like, what are your hobbies? And that's like the first time it really hit me. This was a couple years ago. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't work. Like, work is my hobby. Like, I didn't really have passions and things that I loved like outside of work. And as rewarding and special and unique and cool as this career is, and how it doesn't really feel like work sometimes, it still is. And so I had to really like find things that, you know, I was just passionate about and I loved outside of like sports and, you know, doing this work that I do. And so I think kind of starting to combine that with, you know, crossing over with baseball fans and sports fans and, you know, seeing like, I get messages all the time, like, thank you for sharing this. And like, oh, that's cool. Like, I've wanted to be a trainer too. Or like, oh, that's cool. You said you go to church on Sundays. Like, you know, and having that unique connection with fans, I think it's really important because, you know, again, I'm a voice for humans. Like, we are a voice for athletes, and athletes are human. And so I don't want people to look at athletes and I don't want people to look at us and think that we're not relatable or that we can't be relatable or that they can't have that personal connection with us. And so that's why I've really tried to like kind of lean into that some more. So,
well, it's really well said, and it's fun to follow. And yeah, the you don't have hobbies. My therapist like bought me on the head when I was like, yeah, I love music. I started this music show too as a side thing to work. No.
Yeah. Yeah,
no,
yeah,
you could just have a hobby and enjoy it. Abby, we've really enjoyed this. Thanks so much for taking the time out this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. It was fun. Appreciate it.
Abby Labar, Quick Pitch on MLB Network. You can check it out every night, and it kind of replays through the night if you get MLB Network here in Canada. It's on in the morning. Helps you catch up on everything, but especially for our purposes, the West Coast games, or for my purposes when there's good playoff basketball going on. Although we're past the part of the schedule now. There's only one basketball game each night the rest of the way, so it's all a little easier to juggle. Speaking of one game.
Yes.
One game to decide this series between the Blue Jays and the Rays, the rubber match. It's Kevin Gausman against Zach Littell. 3:07 start, a little work from Dome. Kevin Gausman, we laid it out a little bit earlier when we were talking the positives of how Alejandro Kirk has controlled the run game this year. Kevin Gausman is going to have to be on here because he has historically not controlled the run game particularly well, doing a better job of it early on this year. But this is a Rays team that is number two in the league in stolen base attempts. So Gausman and Kirk, be ready. Gausman, of course, comes in 3.97 ERA. He's pretty much Kevin Gausman at this point. We've had enough sample size that other than the blip with the pitch count, Kevin Gausman is Kevin Gausman.
Yes.
Fastball, splitter, slider. Splitter getting a little more left to right movement on it than we historically see. So more kind of moving more like a secondary fastball than that depth off speed that Gausman likes to use the splitter as, but the results are pretty good. The Rays weirdly haven't seen him a lot, only 23 plate appearances.
That is weird.
Against them, which was a little surprising. And then the Jays have seen Zach Littell a little bit more. Alejandro Kirk, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Dalton Varsho have all had a good time against him. Although, as I mentioned, Dalton Varsho not in the lineup today. The typical, as he works his way back from his shoulder, as we understand it, getting the odd day off here. Otherwise, it's the usuals in the lineup. Bichette, Guerrero, Santander. Springer gets the DH day. Santander takes right. Kirk behind the plate. Barger, Clement. Straw draws in center field. And Lucas playing left. Are you going down for this one, or are you just going home to watch it?
I can't go down for this one.
Much on the line? Can't stomach it?
Yes, exactly. This is a very important series here, mid-May, and yeah, I'd just rather watch it from the...
You're choring.
No, listen, chores, you know, as I say, if I don't do chores in the middle of this homestand at some point, by the end of the homestand, I'll be doing chores for one. So,
yes. Divorce, pancakes, divorce, as it goes. I'm going to try to sneak in around a batting practice in between this show and the game. I'm going to run to the park and hit with some friends now and then run back for the game, and then I got to... Our season openers tonight.
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited to ask about it tomorrow. I'm not even going to ask you like pre-show. I'm just going to wait to be surprised at 11 a.m. sharp.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully it's a good thing to report. I haven't played in a little bit, so we'll see how this goes. If you're looking for the Littell scouting report, interesting guy. So a righty, but he's going to lead slider splitter to righties and lefties. So, you know, slider is a pitch. Mm-hmm. Normally we'd see righty on righty. Yeah. He might dial it back righty on lefty, but he throws them to both. Splitter, you might use it more righty on lefty and dial it back versus righties. He uses them both. The fastball, which is only like 92, is his third pitch. Also throws a sinker. He'll mix a sweeper in there. Again, kind of a weird profile. The slider, even though it's been his lead pitch, not a lot of swing and miss on it, and it's been hit pretty hard this year. Some of the underlyings with Littell, there's some warning signs there with some of his underlying metrics, and really not missing a lot of bats this year by his standards. So if you're the Jays, weirder profile than Pepiot.
That's
to go up
say.
And be like, you know, Pepiot, they were looking for the high-rise fastball a lot of the time. Slider, splitter, fastball as a tertiary is a weirder profile to go up there with an attack plan.
Very different look. Winnable game. Winnable pitcher, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if a different look is still producing a 4.40 ERA and a 5 ERA underlying, could be a good day. Gosman Littell, 307. Blair and Barker will have you 2-3 and post game. We will be back at 11 a.m. tomorrow to break it all down. Thanks to Abby Labar for joining us, to Ahmed Austin and Jennifer. Have a wonderful Tuesday.